To order, let's see, all the board members are here and present. Adoption of the consent items, 3, 4, and 5. Approval of the minutes for October. Approval of monthly fiscal report, approval of monthly transmittal. Any comments?
I had one minute thing that I have to tell you about, Brenda. Because I couldn't think of, I meant to tell you beforehand and I forgot. It's in oral communications on page 1 of the minutes, paragraph 1, 2, 3. The second sentence makes no sense. Half of it's missing.
Okay.
It just says, it is a political.
Oh.
Okay.
I saw that too, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that just needs to be cleaned up.
Probably the 8
comes out. I meant to send
you
an email on that and I forgot. I'm sorry.
It is political.
Okay, we're going to approve that anyway?
Yeah, and she'll clean up that one.
Is there a motion?
Yeah, I move we adopt the consent items 3, 4, and 5.
Second?
Second?
Okay.
You can second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? We're all approved. Oral communications?
On that item, as I recall, our electronic recorder was not in operation last time. So should I assume that you took manual minutes? Is that how were the minutes created last time?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Oral communications, the reserve.
I have 2 items. One, I wanted to announce that the demonstration garden, the MOU for the demonstration garden was approved by the Community Services District.
Good.
At their last meeting, so we're going to be going ahead with that, and we're hoping to be able to make a spring planting date. And 2, I noticed that your letter to the East Bay Regional Park District isn't in the packet. Could you supply us each with a copy of that?
It could have been, but we did. Well, anyway, I got some pointers from Lance, which turned out to be the whole letter. But it was sent, and I guess, Brenda, you just didn't include it, so we'll include it next time.
I can copy everybody on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. You want to, just a second. Chief, do you want to wait and do it with Lance? It'll be just another few minutes. Okay. All right.
This is an invite. I brought 1 hard copy. I shall gladly email you all. But this is an invitation. This is an invitation to our end of fire season party.
At the trail. Right?
At the trailhead.
Yeah, those are nice.
Which we used to do and have decided to do again this year. It's been such a massive fire season. We all feel very grateful that a fire did not start in our canyon. The winds were blowing 60 miles an hour, and they certainly could have. Anyway, so next Sunday the 12th.
The 12th, 2 to 4.
2 to 4.
Right,
at the trailhead.
At the upper end?
Yeah, the Grizzly Peak Trailhead.
Okay.
And the other bit of good news that I have to share. This is really unprecedented, actually. It's not yet the end of November. We're not even to the middle of November, really. We have raised 97. We've raised a lot of money. We're up to $9,700.
Wow. Good for you. Well done.
That is
and
nice.
And so we continue.
And that's your part, right?
That is your part.
Not the match.
But I just want you guys to know that there has been such an increase in the community support and the community involvement this year, that I hope you will all come. I hope you will all get a chance to walk the trail and really get a sense of what it is that we are accomplishing.
Yeah,
that's it.
It's Saturday.
Okay, thank you. Scary time.
It's Sunday.
Oh, it's Sunday.
So Saturday. Anyway,
it's Sunday.
This is just an aside, but you know, the last meeting was in the middle of the firestorm, and I got home, and Shelley had virtually packed up everything she needed to do in case there was a fire. She was all set to go, you know, passports
okay,
and,
yeah.
You know, little Ed Bolden.
Yes.
Of course, but anyway, scary.
The thieves like that.
Yeah. It's true.
All the jewelry by the front door.
Yes.
On that same subject, this is sort of a wake-up call for me, the fires in Sonoma County. And I did indeed walk the school trail several times with my wife and other people and looked around up there. And I guess what I realized was how little I knew about fire safety. It looked to me as, and then we should use the person, like there was this ocean of burnable stuff on the side of the canyon, starting a few feet from me, and that there had been hard work done by certain elves there to widen the firebreak as much as possible, but honestly, the trees seemed to me to overarch above that, and the houses on Lake Street right above there. Anyway, all of this stuff that everybody knows, but I never had thought about in the context of what had just gone on at Santa Rosa. And here's why I mentioned this. What I really wanted to know and what I thought I needed to address to the chief in this context is there must be hazard maps that have been created, fire hazard maps.
There's severity zone maps, yes.
And there must be either government or non-government agencies who produce these and make them available, either at cost or free. The same way there are geologic and earthquake hazard maps that warn people when they're purchasing houses about slides and things like this. And I don't mean general maps. I mean maps that show individual houses and that show individual vegetation areas in different colors and the risks associated with them.
There are some things out there like that.
So my question was, rather than go off half-cocked about this, who is there an appropriate authority to whom one could go and say, could I have, please, a map, a fire hazard map of Kensington?
So CAL FIRE, in conjunction with local jurisdiction, does fire hazard mapping. You're not going to like this answer because it doesn't drill down to the independent parcel, but for the area of Kensington and all of El Cerrito Hills, it is all considered a very high fire hazard severity zone, which is the highest. So all of Kensington and El Cerrito from Navalier Street all the way to the canyon is the highest threat zone. Those maps were set up after the Oakland Hills fire and then revisited in 2007, 2008, I think. But they don't drill down to the parcel or street because it's all considered the most hazardous.
Then my comment is, why not take this map in hand and go to East Bay Parks and say, highest fire hazard zone.
They're well aware of the zone.
Well, being aware is good. It's a first step. But as I understand it from the comments that were made at the last meeting, getting specific help on broadening, making a fire barrier there along what seems an obvious place, which is the old school trail, this would be something that shouldn't be that hard to convince the parks people to do.
I wish you were right. Man, I wish you were right. I really do. And like I mentioned at the last meeting, the parks, they have a vision for their fuel management. A lot of it deals with the aspect of the slope. Western-facing slopes move up the priority more than eastern-facing slopes. Your points are all, Anthony, they're right on the money. There's always work that needs to be done. It's never ending. I would say what I could ask you to do as your fire chief, we do it from this position, but as a citizen's position, letters to the park, reaching out, saying, please pay attention to this area. The letter we just crafted talked about, please pay attention, Measure CC's coming up, you're looking at projects, you're looking at areas of responsibility, and we talk to them about remember Kensington and keep us on the list. We are lucky right now that we have a parks manager in Patrick McIntyre that's in charge of the Wildcat area, and I would say he's one of the best we've had. if not the best.
He's the best.
We noted that in the correspondence with East Bay Regional Park, so they...
We never wanted to promote him.
Well, I always say that. We never want poor Patrick to get a promotion at East Bay Regional Parks.
Never.
But we also want to support him. But Anthony, I would encourage you to reach out directly to the Parks District and talk about your presence in the community you live in and your concerns you have. Because what I say means something, what the board says means something, but I think we've seen in past meetings that myself and some of the elves have been to at East Bay Regional Parks, when citizens stand up, it really starts to get their attention because they know that's where the votes are for their parks measures.
Okay, so here's the thought that immediately came to me as I was walking along this bit of very well graded but not finished piece of Grizzly Peak that goes from the current end of Grizzly Peak to the school. My four-wheel drive Subaru could almost navigate this. There are two or three places where this might be a problem. Talk me out of the proposal of getting this wide enough so that some kind of a fire vehicle could get down on one end of
it. I can't talk you out of that. I can tell you that the Parks Department will tell you that is an unrecognized path on their property that they will not maintain.
Well, but they have loads of fire roads all over the park. Why should a proposal for this one, which is almost a road, be much different?
Because that is...
Wait a minute. Thank you, Sarah. I really want it from the...
I wish I knew that answer. They say it's not a road that they consider a road or fire trail in their system, so they do not maintain
it. But it could be. Okay, so yes. then the next question is, how about a chipper? Can a chipper get down there so that volunteers could clear this if they had permission? Yes. and turn it into...
Yes, and we have chippers and we do partnership stuff with the fire district and the parks and the woodland elves where we bring chippers and equipment down in there and do that type of work. You've probably heard in the past, Anthony, we talk about a right of entry permit that we have. Yeah. And that's a right of entry permit that the woodland elves and Diablo Fire Safe spearheaded so citizens could legally work in the park. Before that, anything that was done was kind of done under what we used to say.
Sun rose.
The dark of night.
Cover of
darkness. Cover of darkness.
Okay,
yeah.
So now my next comment is, hold on, I'm not taking too much time. As one proceeds from the Grizzly Peak end down to the school end, now one looks up at the Purdue slope of all of these lovely Monterey pine, this Monterey pine forest. Mm-hmm. Now, it's my impression that Monterey pines are go up like a torch in a fire. Who owns the property above the school, and what's it? It's not the park anymore, but what's its status?
So you're speaking south of the school, on the little hill there.
Yeah,
that's the school district.
I mean, to me, that's just waiting.
Help me out, Sarah. My memory. Last year or year before last, the school district removed 30 eucalyptus out of the top of the hill.
Yeah. A few years ago.
2 to 3 years ago, we begged, well, we continually worked and called Mr. Shaner. You probably know Bob Shaner on Purdue.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, he wrote letters to the school district that I asked him to write, and they ended up removing about 30 eucalyptus out of there.
Eucalyptus is good, but Monterey pines concern me greatly.
Eucalyptus is not good.
No, I didn't. I mean, it's good that you.
Oh, okay. I was just saying.
But I, you know, I would like to. I'd like to see you go after these. And so now this comes back to, we go to considerable effort. You do, and the fire department with your fire marshal, or I'm quite sure what to call him, when you go to the individual Kensington residents and you say there's too many weeds in your yard, and compared to a few weeds in one's yard, this whole slope here is just on a hugely different scale.
Correct.
And do you, as the fire department, not have any clout with the school department?
Oh, no, we have a fair amount of clout with the school department. You have to remember, once you get more than 100 feet away from a structure, we have a lot less flexibility to make them do things.
Well, in light of the Santa Rosa fire, 100 feet ain't much.
But it is what the law prescribes.
Okay. Yeah, no, gotcha. Okay, that's, I'm talking.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to reply to something. The school district is vastly easier to deal with than the park district.
Uh-huh.
So getting them on board for a project, which is really one of our projects forthcoming, to work specifically on that hillside of small pine trees, many of which are starting to turn orange and move toward death as it is. So right there with you. It's harder to work with the park district. And the other thing about that is sad about the park district is that when they have come in with big equipment, they don't work responsibly. And they set off, you know where there's the really big dip in the school trail?
Yes.
That was caused as a result of their coming in with a very large bit of Caterpillar equipment, cutting off the toe of a slide area. And a year of heavy rain came, and it flowed. I stood on the edge of it, and I watched it flow like a river. So I am always, much as you'd like to get the East Bay Regional Parks in there working, this is fraught. They also have their own extremely hierarchical point of view that we work around. And they're much more concerned, actually, with habitat for small animals, wood rats, guessing toadies, than our habitat. So this is part of why we keep doing what we can. I know it's not enough, but we just keep working at it.
Well, I see that. I see what you've done there, and I appreciate it. But I'm thinking, oh my gosh, you know, there's more to do.
Yes, and we share your frustrations. We share your frustrations very personally. Okay.
Thank you. Any other comments? No. Don't see you. I thought maybe you came with something.
No, I'm just a visitor.
Just visiting. Yeah. Okay.
Welcome.
Yeah. If we're done with communications, we're going to move on to the fire chief's report.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming out, everyone, this evening. I want to first and foremost thank Chief Hull for coming out this evening. So I'm going to jump to C under fire chief's report. We had a call back on October 22nd. Where we've received some questions regarding the dispatching of the call. I called Chief Hall and asked him if he would do some research with Albany and see what he could learn, and then we would research from our side. So he gladly said he'd come tonight and let us know what he's learned to up until this point. He may not have all the information, but I'm sure he has a little bit of groundwork started. Chief, I'll turn the floor over to you.
Well, first of all, thank you for the invitation. One could never refuse. However, yes, I guess it was predicated on a call that occurred there at the church, and I believe Director Harmon was the reporting party.
One of the callers, correct.
One of the callers. As I understand it, the very first call, was inadvertently transferred to the Alameda Fire Department. However, when that transfer occurred, there's supposed to be three people on the phone. There's supposed to be the Albany person, the reporting party, and where the transferred call was transferred to. The dispatcher thought the call got dropped because they were all three supposed to be on the phone. But that was not the case. It ended up that the reporting party, Director Harmon, was on the phone with Alameda. The dispatcher, not being part of that phone call, figured the call got dropped. So the dispatcher herself called Confire and relayed the information that was obtained to you during the time of the very first phone call. So what occurred at that point, engine 65 was dispatched to the call. While engine 65 was en route, Director Harmon was on the phone with Alameda, who was trying to transfer her to the correct fire department, Confire, which did occur.
You finish.
At that point, they were able to reiterate that 65 was already en route by the time she got to Confire.
Yeah, I mean, that's essentially what happened, except Alameda County said, and I didn't realize it was Alameda County Fire. Mm-hmm. You simply said Alameda County, and they said, we will not dispatch. And I think the recording showed me escalating somewhere in there.
No, the recording I have is of you speaking with Confire.
That's the one. Because, well, that would have been the third route from...
Yeah, Confire was after you were at Alameda County.
Right.
Yes.
And what Confire said was, we'd already dispatched.
Correct.
And that
right.
must have come from Albany.
The Albany dispatcher who mm-hmm. should have connected you to Confire via a direct dial button, but hit the Alameda button, and waiting on the line to get all three parties on the line, that didn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
So the dispatcher at that point thought the call dropped. She had no idea, so she calls into Confire directly. So that's how the call was actually dispatched. I think from the time you first picked up the phone to dial and the time the engine 65 was on scene, I believe was somewhere around 6 minutes and 40 seconds, 6 minutes, 50 seconds, give or take a few seconds.
Yeah, the times we pulled up from the time the engine was dispatched, so that's when engine 65's made aware of the call. They were, look here. Engine 65 was dispatched at 10:03:49 and arrived at the church at 10:08:03, which is 4 minutes and 14 seconds from the time the bells and lights went off in the station.
And I guess what I want to know is, how long did it take from when Albany Dispatch got the phone call to when they notified Confire to dispatch Engine 65? Because Lance just told us once Engine 65 knew, how long did it take them to get to the church. I wonder how long it took Dispatch to tell Engine 65 go to the church from when Nina initiated the phone call. Do you know that time frame, Chief?
I think he said 6 minutes and 40 seconds.
Well, Albany...
No, altogether, I think, maybe.
No, I think that was just the dispatch end.
Oh, the dispatch itself is over 6 minutes, is what Don says.
If I...
No, wait, let's
if
start
if I heard
again
you right.
on that. Yeah. Hmm?
I didn't think so.
It might have been 2 minutes added to the 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Until...
And what was the call?
An elderly woman
fainted.
She's in her 90s. Fainted at the church, and I ran to the landline.
Okay.
Yep.
At 10:02 and 53 seconds, the Albany dispatcher connected via the ring down line with Confire.
How many? Say that again.
10:02
and 53 seconds.
And when did they answer Nina's phone call?
10:03:49.
No, but when did they pick up and Nina said, we have an emergency at the church? I know they contacted Confire at 10:02:53, but when did Nina contact them?
The recording I have heard from Confire, when Confire is speaking to Nina, the engine's already been dispatched.
Right.
The dispatcher's saying the engine's already been dispatched. We already got the call from Albany. Your question is,
when did Albany get the phone call?
And so I'm looking at the notes here that my operations chief has pulled up thus far and requested. And I don't know if Ricky was able to get this. That's a question we asked. We asked, does Albany have a time stamp for when the first call came in? And they haven't got back to us yet. So that's...
that's the question we'd like to know. Is there a snafu down in Albany?
The first call came into Albany at 10:01 and 33 seconds.
Okay.
So it took them a minute 20.
It looks like the second call that came in to Confire... I think it was 10:04 and 9 seconds.
And that would have been me?
Yep.
Yes.
So...
That would have been after you were transferred around.
Right.
And
right.
they were on
But
the
Albany had
and
already
they were
told
already
Confire.
On the way. Yeah.
Yep.
And Confire had already dispatched.
Correct.
Which I didn't know. And,
correct.
Yeah.
No,
right.
you didn't know.
No one knew that. Yeah, so
no.
I totally
so it looks
understand
like it was
concern.
Just a minute 30 between when Albany got the call and when they notified Confire. Is that right?
Can you repeat that, please?
Well, if they got the call from Nina at 10:01:23, and then they dispatched They contacted Confire, who dispatched engine 65 at
10:02:21.
Oh, 21. Then it's less than a minute.
Less than a minute.
Yeah.
58 seconds is all it is. Okay. And to dispatch, which may not be quite as fast as we would like, but isn't.
But well,
is it a whore?
But
yeah. The issue more is why was I sent someplace? Yeah.
But operator error. Okay.
Yeah.
But it was.
But the dispatch was astute enough. The dispatch was astute enough to figure out something ain't right. So they followed their regular protocols, which is why she dialed directly into Confire herself to relate.
Even though she didn't have the three-way phone call, yeah.
Correct, yes. And I have heard that recording, and it's the Albany dispatcher saying to Confire, this is the situation we have with the patient. It's at 52 Arlington. The call has dropped. Here's the information. And that's what they do if they get any kind of call.
If they don't have
they take whatever they have and they pass it.
Good.
So
I mean, that was...
Well, I believe, Ricky, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, that there was a dispatcher error at the very beginning because she thought three were on the line. The minute that happened, and after she realized it, she then went to the next step of just taking the information to Confire right away.
Correct.
Okay.
So the whole elapsed time is roughly 7 minutes.
From when Nina placed her call to when the engine arrived on scene is 7 minutes.
When the engine arrived.
So there was, so there really wasn't a long lost time.
No, it always seems much longer in an emergency. Yeah. You sit there and you say, I've been waiting here for hours.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you get a misperception.
I have a question. I thought you said it was 10, 20, and 53 seconds before the engine arrived.
No, on scene, 10:08:03.
10:08:03 on scene. Thank you.
So, excuse my very straightforward approach to this, but here's, as a Kensington resident, what I think or thought might happen in such a situation. That Albany Dispatch is called, that Albany Dispatch calls the nearest emergency service location, which is Kensington, which I haven't heard mentioned yet. And Kensington Fire Station dispatches their fire truck to the church. It's not at all clear to me why Alameda is involved in that, and I don't even know what Cogfire is.
I think
they never should.
Why has the word Kensington been left out of this conversation?
Because Kensington doesn't have a dispatch center.
Yeah.
No, I understand that. Albany has a dispatch center.
Correct.
Albany gets the call and they call Kensington. They don't even
have a
dispatch
center.
So Albany is the PSAP, the public safety answering point for Kensington. If you dial 911, it goes to there.
It's a switchboard.
If it's a police related call, they dispatch the chief and the men and women of his police department. If it's a fire or EMS, hazardous material rescue vehicle accident, they have a direct line to Contra Costa County Fire Dispatch, which goes to dispatch, and then that activates.
So dispatch calls Albany Dispatch, calls Contra Costa Dispatch.
Correct.
Who calls?
The fire department.
Which fire department?
Kensington.
Let's put the K yes. Okay. So, and it's impossible for Albany to call Kensington directly in an emergency?
No, they're not. That's not the way it's set up. Albany is not set up to dispatch Kensington Fire. They do Kensington.
I can't stop myself. This sounds like a double handoff where a direct one would be far preferable.
So I can tell you this, for example. I'll go through the cities. San Pablo, Pinole, Rodeo, Hercules, all those places, when they dial 911, they go to different law enforcement dispatches, like the Sheriff's Department or Pinole's dispatch. And if they want police, they get police. And if they want fire EMS, it gets transferred to Contra Costa County Fire EMS.
I got you. So now I recently had a very good friend who had a stroke. And she was barely able to call me on the phone, and I arrived at her house. I dialed 911. I got Albany Dispatch, and as I was on the phone with Albany Dispatch, I could hear the fire trucks starting. She lives close down there. To coming to her home. They were there within 2 minutes. Now, based on what you said, I have to assume that's because Albany Dispatch and Albany Fire are in the same county.
You were in Albany.
I was in Albany, and
yes, Albany has their own dispatch center for police and their own dispatch center for fire.
Okay, so now what I have to say is this extra handoff is because of a two county of a double county barrier. That Alameda is in, I'm sorry, Albany is in Alameda County, but they have to call Contra Costa County.
Correct.
Can I add something?
Yeah,
sure.
How it used to be set up is we had a consortium that no longer exists, and we were being dispatched by the Richmond Police Department.
In Contra Costa County, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, what also was being dispatched out of the Richmond Dispatch Center was police as well as fire.
Okay.
Now, once that consortium broke up, there was not going to be one dispatch center dispatching both entities.
Yeah.
There was a Con Fire Dispatch Center, which dispatches the fire department. And where we ended up is in Albany, which dispatches the police. It also received your 911 calls. Now, what I'm trying to say here is that irrespective of where Kensington PD would have been dispatched from, it still would have taken a transfer to get to Confire.
I think Ricky makes a fabulous point. In the community of El Cerrito, if you dial 911, the PSAP is the City of Richmond Dispatch Center. If you have a law enforcement issue, you're dispatched to law enforcement. If you have a fire EMS issue, it's transferred to Contra Costa County Fire.
Let me also add that part of the reason for the change, the departments were looking for different dispatch centers to go to. What the big unknown here for Kensington was that what unknown at the time was that El Cerrito was going to go to the county. But that didn't work out.
Correct.
So they ended up staying in Richmond. We didn't have that information. We couldn't predict, or I could not predict, that it was going to go that way. So had I would have known they were going to stay in Richmond, I probably would have sat tight.
Yeah, I know. You worked this through very diligently.
So
Lance, am I clear that you still are with Richmond? No.
No.
That's changed. Okay, yeah. Fine.
The police department is with
Police department. Yeah, police department. Yeah.
The El Cerrito Police Department.
Yes, I got it. No, I got it.
So Lance, when there is a call in to El Cerrito for dispatch for fire, is that goes direct to Contra Costa Fire?
No, it goes to Richmond. You can only have one PSAP. So the 911 goes to the City of Richmond Dispatch Center. The dispatcher says, police, fire, medical. You say medical. They keep talking to you. They keep you on the line. They transfer. Confire picks up and then takes the call. Then does the priority dispatch pre-arrival
and that's
instructions.
What should have happened.
You
right?
Still have a two-step process.
Yes.
That's what should have happened.
Then it goes to Confire, and then they dispatch out of those fields. So it's really no different. County jurisdictions don't make any difference.
Okay,
they don't know when they answer the call what the 911 is. So all 911... calls, police or fire or medical, have to go to the same place and then be sorted.
The fulcrum that this is tipping on was simply which button was pushed.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, it could be an Alameda County button versus a county button.
Correct.
But it does imply that the dispatchers need to have a little more education,
training.
Well,
training is asking questions where the call is coming from.
I'll say this. I find the dispatcher to be quite competent to the extent that once she realized something was wrong,
right.
She went in and kicked in.
She did.
Yes. Now, we're dealing with humans.
Right, but the point is, if Nina said, I'm in Kensington, and I need to have fire dispatch, the dispatcher in Albany should realize that Kensington is fires dispatched out of Confire.
They do.
Right. It was. So, I think it was a mistake.
It was a mistake.
Yes. No, it was a mistake.
Fair enough.
And I think right after it happened, like Chief explained, she went ooh,
yes.
And then the call was dropped. So then she direct lined Confire.
Correct.
You know, this whole place runs on rumor. You know that. I had heard that the problem arose because of the zip code given.
No bearing.
Okay. The minute they said 94707, they said, oh, Alameda County, and then went the Alameda County route rather than pushing the wrong button. It was a deliberate choice based on the zip code. Is that just a rumor, or is there any truth to that?
There's no truth to that. We've sat down and we've exchanged all our addresses with them. All of our addresses are in their positron. The computer.
Their system. Yeah.
It's their geofile that knows the
data.
Yeah. Okay.
So as soon as they say 52 Arlington, it comes up Kensington.
Okay.
This was innocent
screw up
mistake.
Yeah, we all make mistakes.
That was corrected.
But she fixed it, which I think is important.
And we still got there within less than 6 minutes. A little bit more than 6 minutes.
A little less than seven.
Yeah, I misadded. Okay.
Okay.
And so Albany's looking at their protocols. They're looking at how that worked, whether it was adequate or if there's any other areas that can be improved upon. So they've looked into this pretty extensively, and this is what we found out.
I have another. Are we done with the? I have another dispatching question, but we're still on this.
Is there a follow up to this at all?
I'm sure Ricky will follow up, and they're talking about protocols and those types of things.
Okay, so it'll get back to the family.
Yeah.
Okay.
If I may, I just want to say this, Ricky, I appreciate your time. I made one phone call, the chief was on it, followed up, I got back in touch with him today, he said I'll be at your meeting, and I'll have the information, and I appreciate that. It makes it a lot easier, and in this situation, Ricky is the lead contact with Albany. Mm-hmm. We did at a lower level start researching it, but I could tell early on I was going to need the chief's help. So I appreciate it.
And he called me.
Thank you.
Just going to say that he called me and
tracked
down.
Have had Marty's letter because to get to you is an experience in and of itself.
Okay.
Because you're right, the place runs on rumor, and I told it was one of our directors.
Mm-hmm.
One of the KPPC.
I don't know how that got there, but
you talk to people.
It'll get straightened out sooner or later. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Ricky, enjoy your evening, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Right home.
Yeah.
One more question, if I may. Also related to 911 dispatching. I'm aware now of two instances. One where Gail Feldman reported this at the last meeting, and I can quote right from the minutes. Gail Feldman said she called 911 about the fire in Feldman Park last Sunday. The dispatcher told her that it was probably the smoke from Sonoma Napa. I think that's totally inappropriate. The dispatcher should not say, the dispatcher should call the fire department.
Dispatcher.
And I'm aware, speaking with the with Maya Churi, who is the CERT Area 1, she also, when this was the time when, the fires were going like crazy, and it was smoky. There's no question about it. She also called 911. She also said, and she's right up on the fire line, right up on the urban interface. She called 911, and the dispatcher told her, that's nothing to worry about. That's just some smoke from the Oakland fire. And those kinds of things I don't think we should tolerate. I think if 911 gets a call that somebody thinks they smell smoke, they should call us. They should send an apparatus up to make sure that it's not the real thing. These both could have been wildfires coming out of Wildcat Canyon. They weren't, thank God, very small favors, but they could have been. And that's just two that I know about. I don't know how many more.
I respond, please?
Huh?
Can I respond?
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, I had heard this, or something to this effect, And I did some searching, checking into this on my own. And you were right. They had the Napa and Sonoma County fires going on. There was also a fire at the in Tilden Park. I think it was the golf course.
Ajax Place. Yeah. Is it right at the interface between?
The dispatch center had been receiving several calls. One of the things that they were asking the callers, and I never heard this come up in any of the statements that I've heard, was, do you see fires?
Yeah.
And a lot of the calls, I think there were five or six calls that came in. And one of the questions they were asking is, do you see fire? If the caller did not see fire, they weren't going to send the unit. If the caller did see fire, they sent the unit. The fire at the golf course, I think it requested some assistance.
Yeah, we had a unit there.
Even El Cerrito Fire Department
responded. Yeah, we had El Cerrito unit there also.
Had there would have been another caller saying that they saw fire at a different address that was not Napa or Sonoma County or the golf course, and they would have told that dispatcher they saw a fire at a different address, they would have found another fire station or fire unit to send to that fire. Now, the story that I heard was that the dispatcher was either flippant or somewhat harsh or nonchalant. I can say that has not been my personal experience in meeting and watching how they operate in the dispatch center. I'll give you this, although it was in Albany, but if you can get an opportunity to listen to the phone call of Director Harmon's experience, you'll see how consistent and kind of monotone and trying to cut through the stress, because she was obviously stressed at the dispatch.
And I was escalating the more. I think what he heard was...
Now, I'm not saying this to discount the description of the person who said they had the experience. I find that the dispatchers are consummate professionals, and if they're not, and if they can, someone can demonstrate that they're not, there will be some corrective action taken.
Because I felt really urgent when I was sent to Alameda County, and they said, we will not dispatch. I started in my brain say, that person is just flipping me off.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
But they didn't. They were very calm and just said, I'm not going to help you. But
I'm sure they're all used to,
which is disturbing.
People yelling at them and screaming at them.
Oh, yeah. This firefighter calming me down was...
Well, he wouldn't have had an engine within 5 miles of here or 10 miles. Emeryville would be the closest one.
Richmond? I mean...
Well, no, but Berkeley. Alameda County fire. Yeah.
Oh, they go to Berkeley or something. I don't know. You know, they have a protocol which they can talk about. But.
All right, Chief.
Well,
thank you.
Anyone, any more questions?
Appreciate the effort you put into that.
Chief, what type of protocol would you use under those circumstances? When you've got a big fire in Santa Rosa, a fire...
Mm-hmm. From my perspective, we always prefer to be dispatched. We always prefer to be dispatched out. Now, I do know that when dispatch centers, and I know for a fact, the period of time that Chief Hall's talking about, the phones were ringing off the hook in every dispatch center in all of the greater Bay Area. The business lines were ringing off the hook. Everything was ringing off the hook. So I know the dispatchers do try to, they call it call triaging. Mm-hmm. And so they'll start to ask you a list of questions. Do you just smell smoke? Do you see smoke? Do you see fire? I always say err on the side of sending an engine out. Because they're out, they're on the road.
Just the fly fishing.
And from my perspective, it's best to go check out every call we have.
But given what you've just described as trying to triage with the number of calls coming in, then something was, they would have had to triage because you wouldn't have enough engines to dispatch.
Correct. They would have called what they call call stacking, and then they start holding smoke investigations.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, though. I wanted to thank you again for calling me.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
You know, and Chief Maple does. We had two or three conversations, so I appreciate it. That
you're more than welcome. We're all part of the same community
right.
here. So anytime you want me to attend or anything that I can do to kind of bring some clarity to something, all you have to do is ask.
And it wasn't because it's me sitting here. I think it's because it was a church full of elderly people or just any call that went askew. That was my sense, too. So thank you.
Thanks very much, Rick.
Oh, you a cup of coffee, Rick?
You owe me.
Yeah.
Stiff drink.
I think dinner at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you, Rick. Bye-bye. Thanks so much.
Okay, you'll see in my chief's report here, this kind of overlaps everything we're talking about. This is a short synopsis of our mutual aid that we provided to the North Bay fires. I'll just cover some key things so you know what type of personnel commitment that we had up there. The night the fire started on October 8th, Battalion Chief James responded from his residence in Windsor directly to the fire to help with command and control and support. It should be noted that Chief James worked for the Windsor Fire Department before he came to us in 2000. Mm-hmm. So he was there with some great local knowledge and mm-hmm. could add to their command presence at the scene. Later on October 9th, Engine 372, with Captain Renshaw, Engineer Halligan, Engineer Anthony Mechalek, responded directly from Station 72 in El Cerrito to the fire. When they got on scene, of course, you can imagine what they saw. They were in an intense firefight for the first 24 hours. They didn't get relieved off the scene. On also on October 9th, OES 300 was dispatched to the Tubbs Fire with Captain Crumpacker, Fire Paramedic Carrion, Dawson, and Thatcher, and they were assigned to fire attack and structure protection. They also were left on the line a little bit longer, 36 hours before they were relieved, just due to the short resources that were in the area. On October 12th, Battalion Chief Gibson was sent out as a strike team leader to rendezvous at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds, pick up his five engines and go out and also continue with structure triage and structure protection. All of these resources, not just including ours, but others that were there the first day and a half, the majority of them, it worked a minimum of 24 hours straight. So you have to take into consideration they also could have been here for 48 hours. And that could have been their next day. When I say 24 hours straight on assignment, that means with their rig fighting fire,
awake,
moving from house to house to house, not there for 24 hours. They were working.
Wow.
During this incident, it was, I have some statistics here. This is just the Lake Napa Complex Fire, which was a group in the Napa County area. This is the fire that had approximately 6,700 structures destroyed. And at the peak of this fire, there were 5,500 fire personnel there from 362 agencies from 14 states, to include Australia. During this time period, I've heard the stories that have come back from my crews. They're never going to see it again. It was what they saw was the most impressive, horrific act of Mother Nature. Some of the weather sites in the area, Coffee Candy, had wind gusts of 95 miles an hour. So it's a miracle to say this, but it's surprising more people didn't perish in the fire.
Yes.
And I'm happy to say that all of our units made it home safe, without damage, without injury. We rotated some crews about 7 days into it. The two engine companies were there 12 days each. So it's I hate to say this, but it's the best thing in the world that we can do to go practice in someone's backyard and provide aid when we can.
So I was wondering because it was obvious that so many firefighters there weren't enough people that first couple of days. So like if there had been a big fire in Lexington during this time, or in El Cerrito, would Berkeley have covered that? Or
well, we staff up right when we send an engine out. So at no time during this,
our people are overtime.
Did we go, we never went longer than an hour without the engine back in service. And if you notice, we send them staggered. One, then we staff back up, then one. So during this whole period of time, we still had our full complement of three engineers, nine firefighters, and a battalion chief on duty.
I see.
Uh-huh. Yeah, no, and to be completely honest with you, we sent two engines and they were screaming, they're still screaming for resources, but from the position of fire chief, I can only deplete my organization so far because ultimately what's most important is right here. Mm-hmm. For an agency of our size, we ended up at the peak of it having 10 members of a 33-person department there. In comparison, Contra Costa County has 400 firefighters. They had 8 there. Huh. Richmond has 100 plus. They had 3 there.
Really?
So yeah. Hmm. So we have been blessed over the years. I say this to the board, and every time I publicly speak about this, the men and women of the Kensington El Cerrito Fire Department, they thrive on coming back to work. They thrive on going to these incidents, and we never ever have a problem when the bell rings getting people to come back to work. I mean, to tell you the truth, I had a problem getting people to go home. Because they were just hanging out going, well, are we going to send anything else? And I go, no, you need to go home, rest, get away from it for a second, be back in 24 hours. So, no, we did really well during a time of the year that still families are traveling. And so that's not, remember, we got 10 people out, we still have vacation, we have workers' comp, sick leave, whatever else is going on. So it's we did really well.
I just want to say I was really impressed by the response to the neighbor at the end of Purdue who thought that something was seen in the distance.
You know, Ciara, you make a good point. I promise you, I'm not checking my Facebook. I'm gonna. Someone mentioned that I should bring this up tonight. One of the board members did, so I just need to pull up the memorandum that I got that night, so I can tell you accurately. So it was the evening of October. No, 17th. I got this on the 18th. 8:45 p.m., the fire department was dispatched to a possible vegetation fire, 1114 Purdue. It was a fire reported in the canyon. So these are the resources that responded. Engine 65, 72, 71, 64, Battalion 71, Battalion 64.
Wow.
CAL FIRE sent a bulldozer, 3 engines, a battalion chief. East Bay Regional Park sent 2 engines. Moraga Arenda was in the preparing phase of sending 2 engines, except we got on scene by the time they got dispatched out. They were sending 2 engines and battalion chief. Contra Costa County Sheriff's Department had their helicopter up Star 3, which provided a patrol over the entire canyon with their heat-seeking camera and visual support for overhead. I think this is an example of really, really what we can bolster through our automatic aid and our relationships with our surrounding jurisdictions. I will end with the point, and I was corrected by my battalion chief, because the following day we had a water main break on Purdue. And I said, well, that's because all those fire trucks going up and down Purdue. They staged them before Purdue got to single track. So it was out on the wide section and the water main break was farther down. But I saw that on my phone. I'm like, oh, the fire trucks caused it. But we did not. So it's just an example of the resources we can get out there. It ended up being classified as a false alarm. There, Captain Casterholm believes it probably was some flaring from one of the refineries way out in the distance. And it's completely normal. When we're in a red flag condition and there's smoke in the area, it's completely normal to call 911, and it's a great exercise of resources. And I'm glad it wasn't a fire.
Well, and it's very reassuring that they can call up that quickly.
Shows the response. Yeah. Wow, enormous. Yeah.
And it really defines mutual aid.
It does. Yes, it does. Cooperation. Yeah.
Well, from time to time, throughout my career, we get questioned on the things I refer to that people are like, why doesn't he just say what it is? But when I say boundary drops or mutual aid or automatic aid, not any of the fire departments in the greater Bay Area, minus San Francisco, which every once in a while they do call, can do it on their own.
Yeah.
It takes all of us in a collaborative fashion to try to get on the same page of music and be able to respond together. Mm-hmm. You guys remember, I sat on the board of the East Bay Regional Communication System back in 2006 when we said we need the same radio systems, we need the same channels, we need to do this, and those are the things that we've progressed through the years that make it a better service.
Extraordinary.
Don, that's all I have.
Okay.
I was a little long-winded tonight, I apologize.
No. I think we want to hear about this, so I think that's good report.
Thank you.
But I'll speed along because I don't have anything on my side. So.
There was a lot to cover.
So we have a new business, MAC 5 additional service request 02 in the amount of $6,800.
Can I ask a question on that?
Yeah, I was just going to explain.
Yeah, go ahead.
Basically, the architect in MAC 5, the project managers, had a contract. The service through the end of June, you know, when we had that meeting.
So they both just have gone on a kind of a, we'll catch up to you later. And I think we haven't heard from the architects, but I think this is some catch up in the past and then looking ahead for a little bit, you know, rest of the year, early part of next year. And did we make it an hourly? Or lump?
It is hourly.
So they had suggested a lump sum, and I had suggested in-house that we do it hourly, because I'm not really sure that we need them very much in this next period of time.
Just one point of clarification. Yeah. This is not catch-up. This is to move forward. We were square.
No, but, well, I thought their contract ran out the end of...
It did, but...
They squared up.
They still had some hours. We squared up, and then when those ran out, this is to move
fine,
forward
okay.
through the geotech.
Okay, I got it. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'll tell you what my concern is on this. Their fee is over 20% of the total cost of the work. For construction management?
I think we're going to take a look at it. I'm not going to disagree with you.
Yeah, but I just thought... 20% of the total cost of the work for construction management is way out of line.
And we're not building anything yet.
What fee are you referring
to? I'm talking about the geotech work. You know, the trenching.
Oh, the geotech.
The trenching. Yes. Isn't that what they're asking for? That was my understanding, that it's the earthquake determination, earthquake fault determination, and I don't think we're paying more than $30,000 in total for the two studies. And their estimate is $6,800, which is in excess of 20%.
I believe it is to manage through the geotech, but also to keep the project going in the right position, coordinating with the county and the county peer review of the geotech, and also any things we need to do in the meantime if we have to get back with the architects in our pre-design and those type of things. Does that sound right, Brenda?
Yes.
Yeah, that just seems to me like a very big number, more than 20% of the total cost of the work for their supervision and coordination. I'm not a contractor. That just seems to me 20% is.
I think if you tie it back directly to the dollar amount of the geotechnical work, it does seem that way. But I think you have to step back from that a bit and look at the global project that they're steering us through and the other components of it. It's not just the geotech right now. It's any other questions that come up, any other issues that come up, any other follow through that we might need on the project during this time period.
So this $6,800 is a not to exceed number. It won't necessarily be that.
Is that? It's just a flat request. So.
No, it's a $170 an hour hourly request.
For 40 hours.
Correct.
But they may not do 40 hours, in other words.
Correct.
Any other discussion? Motion? It's a popular piece.
You can move. You can move.
Okay, second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposing?
No.
Okay. Measure passes, and I hear what you're saying.
So I gather that we haven't done the trenching and the geotech.
No, it got awfully complicated, and part of it, the complication is that we're so close to the fault that there's added requirements, and we now have a third person, which is a sort of peer review.
Right.
And they switched from just one long trench to using this a geophysicist who uses sort of sound impact into the soil.
The sonar we talked about.
I think they had some trouble with the paving and you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
So when are we likely to hear?
Well, they have it in bits and pieces. I mean, it's not put together yet, but I think we're all thinking we'll have a product for the December meeting.
Uh-huh. And they still to trench as well, is that still part of the conversion?
When they switched, they said they might want to do some additional trenching, and they brought that up, and I don't know that with you.
I think where we're at right now is the geophysicist did the sound test,
yeah.
Did that stuff. That report is still not finalized. I know they've met with the geotechnical firm. They have to come together to determine
next step.
How much trench, where the trench, or to trench at all based on the report.
Yeah.
But but we don't have an interpretation or an executive summary on that part of the report yet.
So they've done the sonar and they haven't done the trenching?
Correct. Right. And well, that's what happened. We were going down a path of trenching, Don, and then the peer review that you have to have at the county stepped in and said, well, if I was to review this, this is what I'd want done first.
Oh, so, okay. So we inverted the order.
So it changed the order. Yeah, okay. That's why we had that change in the last packet.
And it didn't actually change the cost.
No, it did not change the cost. I mean, didn't they just move the hourly again? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's still a possibility that they wouldn't trench?
Yeah, they're considering it.
It's up for consideration right now.
But it would be probably more local. In other words, there might be some area that the geophysicist wants something looked at.
So we'd go from the end of the property to the island?
No. Actually, I was walking the dog one Sunday morning kind of early, and the guy was there, and he had... he didn't tell me what he found, but what he had gone all the way across. He was down there at daylight, and they went all the way across the Arlington, and then all the way up the drive, and then all the way along the parking area in the back. So he got a lot more coverage than we would have gotten out of a trench.
Well, presumably, I guess with the information you get from the sonar, that tells you where to trench.
That's, I think, what he's finding. Yeah. There's some things that he can't read or yeah. Okay.
If at all, yeah.
See, did we vote on this? Yes, we did. Yes, we did. Said no. All right, good. All right. Board reports, finance?
Nothing other than, we did it in the consent calendar.
Okay. Public safety, we just have basically told you where we are on that. Education?
I posted a notice on next door. There's been a recall of a significant number of fire extinguishers produced in the last 40 years.
Yes.
So I posted the recall notice so that people knew.
On where?
Next door.
Oh, okay.
Can I ask a question of the chief? What do you do with spent fire extinguishers? How are they disposed?
Are they hazardous waste? Ours are all serviceable. Everything we carry on the engines are serviceable.
No, personal.
Oh, yeah. What does he do?
Household hazardous waste. Household hazardous waste.
Yeah. So it goes to
And they have a relatively short. They have a relatively short life. I mean, in my office, someone would come around almost every year and charge them, and it's what the city of Oakland made them do. Okay. Contra Costa County Special Service.
Yes. I'll keep it short. I passed around minutes, and there's some extra copies here if anyone wants one. This was a very interesting meeting, which is why there's three pages of minutes. I promise I'll never do that again. But the essence of the meeting was sort of an analysis of East Contra Costa County Fire Protection District. And I think if you've read the newspaper, you know they've been in a fair amount of problems. So this was a three-point presentation. The first point was basically a history of Proposition 13. The second point was a very good presentation by their new chief, Brian Helmick, who basically gave an overview of what the department does. They have had to cut their protection to the bone, to the point where many parts of East Contra Costa Fire District now are the lowest rating possible. I think it's an 8. It's the lowest, which means they're not covered. And you can imagine what happens to fire insurance rates if you get an 8. We did the opposite by enhancing our water system. We went from, I think, a 3 to a 2. If I'm not mistaken, four to a three to a two, which I don't know if everybody noticed it, but that reduced your fire insurance rates. So they have been struggling, and they gave this was a little embarrassing because I was in the front row, but they get 8% of their ad valorem tax, and Kensington gets 30%.
compliance reassurance or reassurance that they're next quarter.
And this is all based on what happened 20 years ago. Now, the East Contra Costa County actually was not in existence 20 years ago. And new districts that are formed after Prop 13 are the ones that are exceptionally, take a harder hit. So the question is, what do we do about it? Well, there's several things. There's one thing that passed a parcel tax, which is what our police district did to change the allocation to increase their revenue. The parcel tax for East Contra Costa County failed a couple of times. And I asked the question, well, if people are getting 200% increases on their fire insurance, why aren't they willing to pay a couple hundred bucks a year more for parcel tax? And they said, well, most of the people aren't getting hit. And the people that are getting hit are certainly willing to pay the parcel tax. So it's...
There's one key element in East County that gets overlooked on the ISO rating and the parcel tax in comparison to insurance. If your home is sprinkled, your ISO rating doesn't matter. You can get good insurance.
Oh.
And so there's a lot of those tracks in Oakley and Brentwood are sprinkled.
Oh.
And so if those homes were not sprinkled, there would be a greater
pass.
Impact.
And yeah.
Probably have a more movement.
Is that using that residential?
Yeah. Yeah. R2 sprinkler system. Yeah. You get that your ISO rating doesn't apply to your homeowner's insurance.
So the entire video and the meeting went rather late. The entire video is available on the website, and I promised that there's going to be minutes. But I guess writing down the minutes for this meeting is a challenge for more than just me. So that's basically what happened at the last Special District Association meeting.
Okay.
That's a good one. I'm sorry, I missed it.
Diablo Fire Safe. I'm just moving on here. Anything to report there?
We're basically at the end of the cycle, and I guess it's a little unclear right now what the next cycle is going to be for Diablo Fire.
You mean grant cycle?
Yeah. So the last meeting was basically cleanup. Right, the final reports and that sort of thing.
Sure. We have no, Diablo Fire Safe Council has no new federal grants for next year. This is because this last year, California was only granted $2.1 million to be distributed, as opposed to usually getting over three. Hmm. So our application was not funded. Diablo Fire Safe Council are talking about how that focus for the next year gets what we do with our focus and focusing on relationships out of which partnerships come. Part of the reason that Kensington's self-funding has become so important, because we are able to continue with your help, but to continue to do some self-funding of projects. So we are in better shape because of that. And Cheryl will continue to apply for grants, absolutely, but this is just gonna be a blow in the action. But I do think for you guys, and I'd love to work with you on this, Janice, we really do need to do an education program in this town about juniper. So many people say, what, you mean it's a fire hazard? Like the family's always the last to know. So I think really...
Well, Michael Bond showed that video
in
the next room of cars catching on fire in the driveway with juniper on either side. I mean, it was an absolutely horrific video.
Well, I mean,
maybe we ought to put it on our website if people in doubt about what kind of a fire hazard juniper is.
But Jazz, when we talk about evacuation planning and evacuation in Kensington,
mm-hmm.
bear in mind all the juniper that is right along the edge of streets. and that if that burns, that is definitely going to impact any kind of...
No, I'm serious. You know, we can talk with Michael Bond about where he got that video, but that was breathtaking. We could put that on our website
anyway,
if you have
so
it, you know, and right above, apply for a juniper removal grant. And here is why.
But more, yeah. More on that, but I would gladly work on an education program with you around that.
Okay, done?
That's all I have.
Okay. Let's see, we're down to the policy manual.
Joe, you want... Do that, or you want me to?
Well, go ahead, but I think basically we met and reviewed and...
We'll be coming back to the board.
Yeah. We fixed it.
Okay.
Oh, good.
Good.
Good for you.
Yep. Thank you. It's a fun job, I'll bet.
Sometimes it is, yeah.
Delightful.
Correspondence, I'll let you look at that.
Very nice.
Anything you want to point out.
Actually.
But we have a lot,
yep.
So...
Larry Carr is my new hero.
Isn't that
I said it before.
We're going to give you a copy of the thing
of the article
in the Outlook on Larry Carr. It's
lovely.
Well, I'm sure two different newspapers can work out the copyright problems, but it would be, Larry's one of Kensington's bravest, and it's a very inspiring, I found it to be a very inspiring article, and... It sort of
it's
lets
amazing.
You know what has to be done when there's a fire
going
on.
CR has it. It's on its way to you.
He lives by the Atlas Fire.
No, when you're done, I want to read it.
It's in the packet right here.
Yeah.
There's another copy right in the
packet. Chief Carr lives in, I believe it's called Circle Oaks, by Barry and Son.
Yeah.
And he lives directly where the edge of the Atlas Fire burned, and so he stayed back at his property. And pretty much
protected
the entire
community.
Neighborhood.
Oh, wow.
So he was there alone for quite a bit as it was all evacuated.
In a really scary
quite
place.
A story.
I think we're done. We're adjourned.
Okay.
Thank you.
Larry, please call me tomorrow.
Okay.
This is about more funding for you.